Welcome to Blackter. Join me as I examine the best of Black artists in my quest to becoming one myself. Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Blackter. I am your host, Gabe Moses. So, I never expected to take 3 months off this season. But let's just say I was crazy to think I would be able to keep up with the podcast in the midst of my final semester as an undergrad. That being said, I am so excited to get back with more new episodes in the coming weeks. Last episode, we took a look at the life of the most recognizable voice in Hollywood, Morgan Freeman. At the end of that episode, you may remember hearing this.
When the time comes, what do you want us to remember about you?
Let's just say we're going to save that hint for the next episode, because this episode is a special treat. If you remember from season 1, episode 10, for color girls who have seen Camille A. Brown, I covered the Tony-nominated choreographer Camille A. Brown. Well, this is part 2. But this time, instead of talking about Ms. Brown, I'll be talking with her. For this episode, I had the privilege of interviewing and being in conversation with Ms. Camille way back in January. What an honor it was to speak with her. Throughout the episode, we touch on more of her background, her road to becoming a professional dancer and choreographer, her success with her very own dance company, and her impact on Broadway, the American musical theater scene, and beyond. Thank you, Ms. Camille, for sharing your voice and being so open to speak with me. So, without further ado, let's get into it. All right, hello everyone. I am here with Miss Camille A. Brown. How's it going, Camille?
Good. Thank you for having me, Gabe.
Absolutely. The pleasure is all mine. So, the first thing I want to know is how you learned and found out about the episode that I did of you.
Oh, yes. Well, I was working on the show for Color Girls Who Have Committed Suicide, When the Rainbow Is Enough by Ndizake Shange. And I was just doing research on podcasts and I put in For Color Girls, and then it finished it with For Color Girls Who Have Seen Camille A. Brown. And I said, what is this? And I totally freaked out. And I said, oh my gosh, what is this? And I listened to it and I was so moved and honored. And I was really speechless because I wasn't, I mean, of course you're focusing on research for something else, and then, you know, this other thing just pops up, and it's something that was so encouraging, and like you never know who's watching you. So yeah. It was amazing. It was an amazing feeling, so thank you for that.
Yeah, I mean, thank you. Like I said, the pleasure is all mine, because, you know, I didn't know that when I was doing that episode that you would even ever listen to it. You know, that was not the intention at all. So the fact that I was literally 10 episodes in when I just started that podcast last year, it's a great feeling to know that I could reach you, literally.
I was amazed and proud and excited to share it. So thank you.
Awesome. Yeah. And so with this interview, we'll kind of dig deeper into everything I talked about there to get your personal perspective.
Sure.
So, in that episode, if you remember, I say the beginning, I was like, I didn't know much about your childhood. So I have questions about that. So to start off, do you want to speak to your experience as a clarinetist?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I wouldn't say that I was performing at the, you know, I don't know. I was in the honors band. I liked playing the clarinet, but I didn't love it. I loved music and what it meant. And I loved being immersed in playing a lot, immersed in being around live music.
Yeah.
But playing the clarinet wasn't necessarily my love.
And would you say music, like you just said, is a big part of the reason you fell in love with dance?
Oh, yes. I mean, my mom is a real big part of it. She is a lover of dance and a lover of music and musicals. And she was the one that really, and she introduced me to musical theater and what it is. And She would share with me her favorite musicals, and I would watch them. And you know, on the side too, I would love watching Michael Jackson and Janet Jackson videos and try to learn the routines from the musical theater shows as well. And music is like the heartbeat. Of course, you can find like there's music in silence as well, but just in terms of like creating a narrative and this storytelling, I mean, there's so much in music that you can just vibe and be inspired by.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, music is also a big part of my life. Even though I'm not primarily a dancer, I'm an actor, and still music is for everyone, literally.
Yeah.
So can you tell the story of how dance, literally, like how you became a dancer? What was that first moment of like, oh, I think I want to do this for the rest of my life?
Oh, you know, I don't remember the exact moment, but I do remember feeling like dance was one of the few ways that I could really express myself and escape being teased and feeling bad about being teased. It was a safe space. So I remember wishing that I could just dance all the time, every day. And then when I went to it's known as the Fame School, but LaGuardia High School. And then when I went to the Ailey School, I saw firsthand the Ailey company dancers. And I thought, oh my gosh, you can tour and dance and get paid for it and go around the world. It was something that I loved, I wanted to do, but I didn't know. You know, in school they tell you doctor, lawyer, teacher, but artist is not normally one of the things that they tell you you can be. So I didn't know that it was something that I could actually do as a career until I got to high school, where I was surrounded by artists who were actually working in the field.
Yeah.
I do have to give a shout out to my dance school.
Oh yeah.
I am originally from Jamaica, Queens, New York, and I went to Bernice Johnson Cultural Dance Studio, and then I went to Carolyn DeVore Dance Studio. Well, both of them are in Jamaica, Queens, and Carolyn still has her dance studio, so shout out to all my teachers from there.
In those early trainings, did dance kind of come to you? Was it difficult at first, or was it just very natural? What was your growth like back then?
Oh, I don't know. You know, it's hard for me. It's hard for me to say, oh, yes, it just came natural to me. I just did it and I was hitting it. You know, it's hard. It's hard for me to say that. I loved moving, and the love of it, the joy of it, the idea of being a character and performance, all of that felt really good. But it wasn't until I got older that I realized that that wasn't the only aspect of dance that I had to deal with. It was also body type and people not seeing or seeing you in one way, not seeing you in one way. And it really took a little away from the joy of dancing. Because when I was younger, it was just dance for love and performance. And you know, you have the big performance at the end of the year and your family comes out and it's amazing. And then as I got older and continued my studies, it became more about, well, how do you look? Can you fit the costume? It started getting about that, becoming about that. And that was really hard to navigate as a student. And as a Black girl who has a chest and a butt and hips, and you know, it was hard to deal with.
I just did an episode on Debbie Allen, and I talked about there, like, her career. You know, she started out as a dancer, and a big part of why, like, back then, of course, it was a whole big thing, was like, oh, your body isn't suited for ballet, and that wasn't the case. It was because she was Black. So what does that have to do with, not even like ballet, but dance as a whole? How do Black people try to fit in to that world?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that Debbie Allen, I used to write essays about her. She was someone that, I mean, I still look up to her. But to see how she has expanded from going, starting as a dancer and being a director and a choreographer and a director of film and television, you know, having her own school, it's just, it's mind-boggling. And then it just came out that she's gonna receive a Kennedy Center honor. And it's just like, wow, what a dynamite, explosive, expansive career. And I'm so inspired by her. And well, my body holding me back, I wasn't necessarily chosen for a lot of the opportunities to work with choreographers in school. Mm-hmm. And I was told that it was because I didn't fit, they knew I was gonna fit the costume or my body type, you know, it still is in development, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So that really prevented me from having access to choreographers that I really wanted to work with. But it also gave me an opportunity to work on my choreographic voice, because that was the turning point in terms of when I started thinking about composition and improv classes as actually vehicles to get me through school and to really help create, okay, well, what is Camille's voice? Like, since you don't have the opportunity right now to get in front of someone else and to share who you are and to get immersed in their voice, what is yours? So even though it was really hurtful and I had a really hard time and I struggled a lot in school because of those things, you know, I don't regret it, because I don't know if I would have found choreography the way I did.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of made you who you were, you know?
Yeah.
It built you up.
Yeah, you know, at the time you think it's tearing you down, but, you know, long term, it's actually building you for something else that you wouldn't even thought.
Right.
You know, because I always wanted to be a dancer. I never thought that I would have the opportunity to be a choreographer and a director. And the thing that sparked that, even though when I was younger, I was always putting things together and trying to put on shows and stuff like that, it didn't really all come together in terms of like, wow, this is actually something you could do, until after I graduated college.
Yeah, and so kind of going off of this, did you know you wanted to, you know, be the founder of a dance company?
No, I knew I did not want to be a founder of a dance company. I danced with Ronald K. Brown Evidence for 6 seasons, and I would see how hard Ron worked. And it wasn't that I was afraid of working, because I was always a hard worker, but I just saw how many hats he had to wear. So he wasn't just the choreographer, he was a dancer, he was a manager, he was, you know, while we, after our rehearsals, we would go back to the hotel, he had an interview or he had a meeting to go to. And, you know, I would see that and go, wow, that's a lot of work for one person to hold. And I also thought, you know, I, as a dancer, feel the power of his movement, and also have seen how other people reacted to his movement in the audience. But thinking of myself as a choreographer, I didn't think that I had the potential to make people feel anything from my movement. So I was like, well, I can't have a company. What am I gonna say? I can't do that. I can't do what I see other people doing. So I was very reluctant about having a company, and I started doing commissions and teaching. And after a while, I realized that, I actually did a gig with Diane McIntyre, and her rehearsal process was just illuminating. And I thought, oh my gosh, I want to have a rehearsal process just like this. However, her thought, how she questioned, you know, her own ideas, but also questioned us in the room. She asked for our opinions. We would be in conversation with her and the musicians. And I was just like, wow, this is amazing. And I thought, I would love to have a process like this. But I know that in doing commissions, where I only have 2 to 4 weeks to put something together, I know that for me, it wasn't enough time to really put together a piece with a process for me. Cause I know choreographers that can put out a piece in like a week. I can't do that. Not for my own company. So I thought, well, maybe having a company is the way to go, because that way I can work with dedicated dancers who are there to work with my movement. I can really continue to hone what my craft is and hone what my voice is and really develop it, because I didn't want my influences to overpower my choreographic voice. And it's very easy to do that, especially if you have danced with someone else or you've worked with a ton of other choreographers. It's easy for those influences to become like your work too. So I wanted to make sure that that did not happen. And I thought, well, one of the ways to do that is to create my own community where I can work and make sure that that doesn't happen. And, you know, I never shy away from my influences, but I don't want them to eclipse my voice and what I'm trying to say as a person and a mover.
Did you know, like right away, that you wanted to tell stories about Black culture and history through dance?
Yes. I just didn't know how I wanted to do it. I knew that I've always loved theater. So I knew that whatever I wanted to do was gonna be about characters, theatrical, it was gonna be cinematic, yeah, be that. But the how to get there, I didn't know. So that was scary, and I had to really figure out what my process was. Like even being inspired by Diane McIntyre, it's like, I can be inspired by her process, but I have to still figure out what my process is. Because I just didn't want to do exactly what she did. I wanted to be inspired by that and use that as a springboard into my own, like, what is my creative way of working with dancers and musicians and like creating work and questioning myself, like what does that look like for me? And that took some time.
As a choreographer, how do you find your dancers? How do you say, oh, I want to work with this person, or this person fits this movement? Just like, how do you fit bodies to dance?
Well, at first I asked my friends to help me out, and they were generous enough to give of their time. So one of my friends, Jewel D. Lane, who is a choreographer as well, but he also still dances with me. We met in college, and he was one of the first people that I asked, like after late, you know, late nights, can you come to the studio and I can just set something on you? So it started like that. And then, you know, I would watch dancers over time. I like observing people and seeing how they grow and evolve. And so the dancers in my company, you know, I've known Malik Washington, who is also a dancer and a choreographer, but I've known him since he was 17. And like I said, Jewel, I've known since college. Catherine Foster, I've known since we were students and teenagers at the Ailey School. Beatrice Capote, I remember we were at the Ailey School. We were in different classes, but I think she was like 9 and I was 12 or something like that. Yeah. So, you know, Tim Edwards, I've known since 2008 when he was a student at Hunter College. Maura Mina Parker, I met her. When did I meet Maura? I met Maura around 2000. I've always knew of Maura because she was a fantastic, all of these people were like fantastic people and fantastic dancers, mm-hmm. but I didn't actually start working with Maura until maybe like 2009, 2010. And Chloe Davis, about the same thing. Maite Natalio, we are both originally from Queens, New York, as is Malik, but we went to LaGuardia at different times. I'm 4 years older than she is, but we've known each other since then. And she's a choreographer as well. And just I mean, I could go on and on. Francine Odd, I've known since 2003. Clarice Young, I've known since 2003. I mean, that's the thing that I love about our community is that we built it together. And it wasn't just, it's never just about you, and anything that you do is never just about one person. And the fact that I can still reach out to these people, regardless of whether they've like moved on and done their own, continued to do their own choreographic endeavors or their other endeavors that don't necessarily have to be choreographic. Like Tim is a real estate agent now, and as well as a dancer, but they always know that they can come back home. And that is really important to me, letting my students know that. So that was a very long way of saying that I observe and I watch a lot. And because you're bringing someone into your family in a sense, and you don't want to just bring anybody into that.
Right.
So in order to do that, it takes time.
Was there a specific piece that you choreographed that turned out to be something bigger than you thought it would be?
Turns out bigger than, well, you know, I always, I never, turns out bigger than it. I mean, all my pieces.
Oh, yeah.
Because you never know how things are going to go. All you can do is, you know, I have a feeling, like I feel that this can be something that is weighted and grounded and could be really, really good. But I don't know if that's actually going to happen. So there's always that air of fear whenever I step into a project or create a piece, because you of course want it to be quote unquote successful, but you never know. And yeah. I think maybe in terms of like something that I didn't expect, I would say Choir Boy, because I didn't have an audition. The guys were already cast before I got on the team. So yeah. I didn't have a dance call, and I didn't know, and I hadn't been able to see the show when it was at Lincoln Center. So I said, oh man, okay, I know it's about a choir. Okay. And I read the script, and I said, okay, what, I didn't know the degree of movement that I could do because I didn't see the guys. And it wasn't until we got in the room and I heard them singing and we actually started moving together that I said, wow, these guys can really move. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it went from in my head going, oh, this is probably going to be something very small, to, oh, they're actually doing something riffing on step and South African gumboot dance now. Right. So I would say that was something that I thought was going to be one thing, and it turned out to be something completely different.
And then you got nominated for a Tony.
I did.
That was not planned.
No, thank you for that. No, thank you.
We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the episode. Do you remember the first theater production that you choreographed?
Fortress of Solitude. I will never forget that, because knowing what I know now about theater and about the business, I was very new. I mean, that was my first show. Before then, even though my work has always been theatrical, I had not technically had any theater experience in the theater world. And Daniel Alkin, the late Michael Friedman, and Itamar Moses, you know, they could have picked somebody else. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to choose someone that was basically learning as they were going. And so it was that show, that team is very special to me.
If someone asked you, why does dance and song break out in musical theater, what would you say to them?
Oh, because that's the elevation of it all.
Mm-hmm.
That's the next step. What do they say? I'm totally gonna butcher this quote, but like when there are no words you sing, when there are no when you know there's not enough when you when there's not enough song, you dance.
Right.
Something
When words fail,
I don't
yeah,
know,
music.
but you know what I'm talking about. But it's the same thing. It's like, what is the elevation of all of these things coming together? Theater, visual, you know, movement, acting, lights. It's theater. You know, it's everything. It's the storytelling of it all that lifts it.
Yeah, and so speaking of storytelling, when you're going to choreograph a dance, specifically that's in a musical or a Broadway show, how do you go about telling using the body to tell that story?
Well, it depends on what the show is about because that informs where you go. So if it's a period piece that takes place in the 70s, that gives you a good map of what it is. If it's a specific place, that's helpful too. And then looking at the people in the room and really shaping it for their for who they are. And how they move.
Yeah, so let's start talking about some of these shows. So Once on This Island, that was the revival on Broadway. Were you familiar with the show beforehand, and what was your contribution per se, to the new take on the show?
Well, I was the choreographer, and I didn't know that much about the show, but I did know that. What people were telling me, oh, I choreographed it, I directed it, I danced in it, I did everyone did everything with this show. So it made me extremely nervous because I said, oh my gosh, everybody's done this. So how am I gonna contribute to it? And I said, well, Camille, just do your thing. You know, it's not about you trying to step into or recreate this. It's about you creating your voice and putting it, that's why they chose you to be a part of it. So use your choreographic voice, and that's what I tried to do. And shout out to my team for that, Ricky Tripp, who is the associate choreographer, and Catherine Foster, who is assistant choreographer.
Yeah, I may have gotten this wrong, but it's a wild guess. Was this the first time your choreography was at the Tony Awards?
Yes, that is correct.
Great. And did you watch that performance?
I did. I did. It was so surreal during tech rehearsal because you're sitting on the stage and you're looking at the seats and you're like, I'm normally watching this from my couch. And here I am. You know, when I decided I wanted to do theater, I was actually dropped from my first agency, not concert dance agency, but theatrical agency. And I was dropped and they said there was nothing they could really do for me anymore. And I said, okay. And it was recommended that I reach out to Michael Moore, who is still my agent now. And I remember we met at TikTok on 34th Street. And, you know, I told him that, you know, I know that I am gonna have to work 100 times harder because I'm a black female and this is a white male dominated field. He said, that's true, but we're gonna give it a go. I was just thinking I wanted a show. Like if I was able to do one theater show, then that's great. But to still be here and to talk with you about the many shows that I've done and for you to ask me about being on the stage at the Tonys, you know, that's something that I never would have thought. 'Cause I had to find the black females who choreographed in theater.
Very few.
Very few: Marley Cierby, Katherine Dunham, Diane McIntyre, Paula Moss, Debbie Allen. You know, so it means a lot to still be here.
Yeah, it's a true blessing, I'm sure.
Yeah, thank
Yeah.
you.
So, Jesus Christ Superstar, one of
Yeah.
those shows. I watched it. I've seen that still like probably like at least 10 times at this point. I
Yeah.
didn't know you choreographed it until I did the research for your episode.
Oh,
So,
yes, I
yeah, you did. I
did.
know that now. I'm very glad you did because I've seen it more than anything. And so, was that your first time or the most amount of people you've choreographed on at once?
To
Because,
that point, yes.
yeah, because it looked like there were a lot of dancers in that show.
Yeah, there were 44 people on stage. Now, since then, I've choreographed Porgy and Bess at the Met, which was over 90 people.
Yeah.
But at that time, yes, that was the most people. And that was my first television experience too. So no pressure.
Yeah, no
No
pressure. No pressure at all. I was gonna
pressure.
say, how are you managing that? Was it smooth sailing or did it take some navigating?
Definitely, everything takes navigating, especially if it's your first time. And I said to myself, okay, Camille, trust the things that you know, but then also be aware that there are things that you are going to be learning for the first time, and you have to learn them extremely fast. And so, I mean, it was the same with Once on This Island. That was the first time that I had done anything in the round. So, you know that there's a part of you that is terrified because there are things that you're gonna have to know, you're gonna have to learn and know pretty much at the same time. But you also have to trust your instincts and listen to your gut too.
With that show, did you create as you went along with the dancers, or did you kind of have it all planned out beforehand?
Oh yeah, I'm my process is very organic, so I'll have ideas and I'll have thoughts, and I may have a movement or two, or just like visuals that I see in my head, but it's really not until we get into the space that I could start like actually seeing and piecing things together. And one of the scenes, the last scene, Superstar, that big moment that Brandon Victor Dixon sings,
Yeah.
I actually had to redo that. Because there was a huge technical change that was happening during tech. And so, I had to, that's the thing about theater. It's like you have to be on your feet.
Yeah.
You have to be ready for a change, and you have to be ready to go.
Yep. Yeah, there's no time to ask questions.
No. And if you
Yeah.
do, you got to ask questions while you're moving.
Yep, exactly. Keep the flow going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and so we touched on Choir Boy a little bit, but to get more into it, how was collaborating on that play? Because you talked with Terrell Alvin McCraney a lot, and also the director, to put movement into the show. What was their vision for the choreography?
Oh yeah, so Tripp Coleman was the director, and like you said, I had conversations with Terrell as well, and it was really great because they really let me explore and really help it really let me do my thing, which was amazing.
Yeah.
They had a very they had a very clear vision, but they also supported what I had to offer to that vision. And that is always so exciting and feels amazing.
I think it's also awesome that the show you were Tony nominated for wasn't a musical. It was a play with music. That is very funny, but just goes to show that just it speaks volumes to your talent, what you're able to do in a story and with characters on stage.
Thank you. Well, I don't go into something and go, okay, well, this is a play, so I'm gonna just do this. And this is a
Yeah.
musical, so I'm gonna just do that. It's like, what does this work call for?
Right.
So that's how I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I also had close friends who went to see that show. I did not get to see it live.
Oh.
And I was very upset when it closed, but I did get to see Much Ado About Nothing, Shakespeare in the Park.
Yes.
That's still one of my favorite Shakespeare productions I've seen.
Nice.
So what was it like doing that show with an all black cast, with it having it be outside too, was there like concerns about, 'cause when I went to see it, it was raining. I was nervous that the dancers were like gonna slip on, 'cause the floor I'm sure was really slick. So were there concerns about that at all, or was it just normal like all the other
Well,
processes are?
sorry. I think anytime you do like an outside festival, that is always a concern.
Yeah.
And speaking as a dancer who has performed outside, sometimes it's even harder to perform outside than it is inside because the energy, sometimes when you're inside, the energy that you're putting out is hitting a wall, hitting
Yeah.
something. And when you're outside, it's not bouncing back, it's just going out.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you worry about the rain. And then you think about that Diana Ross moment when she was singing, and then the rain is like, oh, so it does still happen.
Right.
I think we're all ready for those concerns. Things are talked about in terms of costumes and shoes and, what's the safest type of floor or shoes to clothing to prepare people to perform in different atmospheres. So, yeah.
Yeah. One of
Shout
my
out to
favorite.
Kenny Leon, who's the director of that.
Yeah. Brilliant. Brilliant direction, brilliant performances all around as well.
Yeah.
The one of my favorite things about that show was those moments when everyone was on stage having fun. I want to know if it was as much fun in the rehearsal room to create those dances with those actors.
Oh, it's so yeah. People tell me all the time, like, isn't it so much fun? Like, aren't you having fun? And like, my definition of fun in the studio is probably very different from what people want it to be.
Sure.
Like, fun for me is, oh, it's actually coming together and it's actually making sense. Other people might be having a it may appear that other people are having a better time than I am because everybody's laughing and getting their groove on, and then I'm sitting there with a very serious face looking at it. But
Yeah.
that's I'm still working too.
Yeah.
So, it's a balance that you have to do between like having fun and enjoying yourself and also seeing that, okay, my job is working because the actors are having fun, and that's one of the points.
Right.
So, I get enjoyment from that too.
Have you ever worked with actors who don't dance? Because
Yeah.
I'm one of those people, like people say like I'm a great dancer, but I always say like no, I'm a mover, because like I don't have the technique down with the dance. I just know how to move my body and be free. So like, what do you say to actors who don't necessarily dance but move?
Well, I would say, don't try to be whatever you think a dancer is. We look at dancers and we see the flips and the turns and the twists and go, oh my God, I think the actor, the choreographer is going to ask me to do that.
Yeah.
And it's about us helping to pull movement that you either have or didn't know you had in there out. So be encouraged to express your movement and who you are in the space, and don't try to be some don't try to be a thing, because what
Yeah.
is that? What really is that? Most of the theater shows that I've done have been with actors who move. I've actually done more musicals like that than I have with actual dancers. I think maybe three or four musicals I've done have had dancers, and the rest have been either a combination or like Much Ado is only three dancers and then the ensemble. So it's
Right.
been Once on This Island, it was only one dancer and everyone was actors who moved. So it just depends. It's about the collective and really making sure. Porgy and Bess, I only had eight dancers and it
Wow.
was over 90 people on the stage.
Right.
And I told all of them, it's about the collective. It's not about, oh, we're showcasing the dancers now. and the singers just sing. It's not about that. It's about the whole community moving together.
Yeah, that's amazing. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
Yeah.
Your first feature film.
Yes.
Wow. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember the call, the email, the text you received when you found out the news?
Oh, well, I remember the email. I remember all the emails that George C. Wolfe has sent me. So that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yes, I remember being invited to be a part of it. And George Wolfe is one of the reasons why I got into theater. I was always inspired by his work, still incredibly inspired by his work. And to have an opportunity to be in the room with him and to work with him, but also to observe him and to hear and listen to the jewels that he says, It was a remarkable experience, and I was only on set for a couple. I was only in the rehearsal process for a couple of days, but it was just magical to me.
Were you in the room when they were filming that opening sequence with Viola Davis and the rest of the band?
Yes, I was, with the dancers.
Right, right.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, that was all you.
Yeah, that was all me.
Was George kind of giving you anything to work with, or was it all just on you?
No, we definitely had conversations about what he wanted that opening sequence to be, how he wanted the women to move, how he wanted the energy to feel. You know, it was very different from, let's say, like the Cotton Club. He wanted it to be like down home and southern and down and earthy, and you know, I tried my best.
Yeah.
to do that. And yeah. So it was great. It was a great experience.
Yeah, and I'm sure it really different from seeing your work in person on stage live versus seeing it on a screen. Do you want to speak to that? How was that different for you?
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of got a taste of it for Jesus Christ Superstar, seeing it
screen
and seeing it live, and you know, really seeing that. One of the differences between film and TV is that, film and theater is that when you're in an audience and you're looking at a stage, you can decide what you want to look at.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily have to be the featured performer at that time. But then with film, you know, the camera is guiding the story and telling you where to look. So those differences were things that I had to learn, and it's really helped by these experiences. I just watching regular television, not regular television, you know, like just watching TV as a viewer. You know, I have a very different perspective about how things are actually made and come together and where the focus is and where it's very interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, and that was, I mean, overall the film was amazing, you know.
Thank
all of the
you.
Performances were absolutely great. Your dancers, were those dancers, some of them, were they from your company?
Four.
Yeah.
Out of there were eight dancers and four of them were. So that's always great when I can share my theater experiences with my dancers and concert dance. That's always amazing. And to me, it's like when those moments happen, I'm saying like, thank you for giving me this. Thank you for being with me for this long, you know? So it's like a celebration, like, oh my gosh, look at what we're doing. Like, we're doing Ma Rainey, we're doing Jesus Christ Superstar. This is amazing, you know? But they were with me, those people were with me from the beginning. And right. That's what matters to me. And that's what I try to celebrate. You know, it's never just about you.
Yeah. And so how have you been operating now that the arts is in this virtual circle, virtual bubble?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely changed us. Mm-hmm. And because I'm both in theater and concert dance, I've seen it affect both worlds. their differences, but there are also a lot of similarities. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the first things that I thought about when the shutdown happened was my dancers, and feeling a huge amount of responsibility, even though they don't work with me 24/7. I still feel an obligation to them to provide some type of income or help in some way. And so we started doing live classes on Instagram. And then I wanted to use this time to like do more research and go back and read the books that I bought like 2 years ago, but never got a chance to do it because I was working on projects. And I thought, you know, while I'm educating myself, continuing to educate myself, why don't I use my platform to help educate others? So I started reaching out to some scholars that are friends of mine that I knew that I'm always inspired by and learning from, and invited them to give lectures on my platform. And then we just launched a mentorship program where I'm using, where my dancers, both past and present dancers from my company, would mentor a Black young up and coming artist. And it's 18 to 25. Application is still open until February 1st. but those are some things that I've been doing, focusing a lot on education and my initiative. I've had the initiative for years now, but it's had to shift because of COVID. But it's also helped us because we were Everybody Move, which is the initiative, was kind of only in the five boroughs, but now because of this virtual new thing, we've been able to like spread out, which is exciting in a way. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've been doing.
Yeah. Do you think dance and theater will be different when the world is back to some sort of normal?
I think it has no choice but to be.
Yeah.
We're already forever changed, and we can't go back. It's almost like if you have a bowl and you break the bowl, and no matter how much you try to glue it back together, it still will never be the same. It's gonna be a bowl again, but it's gonna be a different one. And I think it's the same thing. It's like it's gonna be theater. Concert is gonna come back. It's all gonna come back, but how it's gonna come back is gonna be very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about your upcoming projects? I heard you're directing and choreographing Ain't Misbehaving.
Yes, I'm directing and choreographing Ain't Misbehaving. I'm co-directing Fire Shut Up in My Bones for the Met Opera with James Robinson. Mm-hmm. And I'm directing For Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough.
Right.
Yeah.
And so your first time stepping into a director hat in an actual theater space.
No pressure.
No pressure at all.
None.
Just the first time.
You know.
So, yeah. But I think the fact that a lot of these shows are, or I'd say mostly Ain't Misbehaving, is a lot of music driven and a lot of dance driven. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Have you seen the original cast and the televised version of that show?
I've seen the televised version, yes, but I was not able to see it live.
Yeah.
Fantastic, but no. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, are you looking to build on that or recreate moments of that in your version?
I'm looking to reimagine it. Mm. So it's not about recreation, but what are the ways that we can honor what was done, but unearth something different? Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm interested in doing.
Yeah, and a new time to a completely different time.
I mean, even it was a new time before COVID, and now it's another new time.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how we were already in a new time because of just, it has been decades since that last one, but now because of COVID, now, you know, these shows coming around, a lot of these shows are going to have new meaning. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting.
Absolutely.
It's going to have to cause us to shift along with that. What does it mean now, today?
Big question.
Oh, no.
Here we go. What is your ultimate goal as an artist?
I want to keep growing. And yes, I want to continue to do film and TV and Broadway and theater in general and have my company forever and work on my initiatives. Like, yes. But at the root of it, I just want to continue growing and being challenged and putting myself in situations that will help me continue to always think creatively, think ahead of the game. You know, that's what I'm asking for. Yeah.
Great answer. I agree with that. You know, never not learn enough, you know. No one knows everything.
No. Yeah. And even though I'm terrified by these new opportunities to direct, it's putting me in a position to grow. Yeah. And that's what I've asked for. And it's the other thing, going back to, if I can connect it to what I've been saying about, you know, trusting your instinct. At the heart of it, you have to trust. You know, there are a lot of things that will be new, but there are also things that I have to trust in me in order to do the projects.
Great. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, there's one last thing. If you have anything else you want the people to know, feel free to say so. Any final thoughts?
I mean, change starts with you. If you don't see a place for yourself, make your own space. And don't let anyone define who you are or who you are not. That's what I would say.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. You can follow me on social media at Black Dirt Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get updates on new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Keep listening for special hints about the next episode. Until then, I'm Gabe Moses, and Black Artists Matter.
When the time comes, what do you want us to remember about you?